Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is 11 minutes after 12 o'clock. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, the first business lunch since the Chicago Cubs have won the World Series. Hey, did you hear that music we started with? That's Peter Himmelman. And I don't know if you were. I was a fan of Peter Himmelman's music back in the 90s, I think, probably mid-90s, and a couple of nice CDs. Anyway, Peter has a book out called Let Me Out. He actually is a guy who was confronted by changes in the music industry, and sort of like all of us, or like many of us, have been confronted with these disruptive technologies and new institutions. All of a sudden, Peter Himmelman was looking around, not making it in music, and trying to figure out what was next. He's reinvented himself, and he's going to talk about that reinvention coming up later on the Business Lunch. Right now, we're going to say hello to Roger Chang. Roger is with CNET, and he joins us from time to time. Roger, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk about Facebook a little bit, and I heard Orion Samuelson in the Business Report say Facebook stock is down, I think, better than 5% today, and that's after a positive report, right? The revenue is up, but they're saying earnings in the future might not be so good.
Yeah, exactly. They posted blowout numbers yesterday. Once again, I think it's like the fourth or fifth straight quarter that it's exceeded expectations. But, you know, Wall Street's all about looking at what's next, and Facebook did warn that growth would come down meaningfully, that this trajectory that it's on right now isn't sustainable. You know, as a result, investors are selling off on Facebook today.
What is it that makes Facebook so profitable that they bring in so much money? What are they doing right?
What they're doing right is they're really focusing on two things, on mobile and on video. In terms of mobile, there's few other platforms out there that can reach as many people as Facebook, right? Like 1.7 billion monthly active users. For an advertiser, that's a really attractive place. You know, advertisers are increasingly looking to target us on our phones, right? It's not just TVs or billboards. Like, the phone is where we spend most of our time, and Facebook has rightly invested in making sure that we spend a lot of time on our phone on Facebook, whether it's through the Messenger app or through Facebook or Instagram. And so that's really the key to success.
And it's not just that gross number of 1.8 billion. It's the way that they're able to distill and find us within that 1.8 billion, right, and target us with their ads.
Yeah, exactly right. Those news feeds are personalized to our preferences. You know, they know more about us than we probably do about ourselves. So they know how to target those ads just right and charge an extra premium for that. So that's really the key to the success.
How does it break down for them? What percentage of revenue do they get when as mobile compared to a laptop? Or I don't know what the reference would be, computer-based.
Well, mobile made up 84% of its revenue, so it's pretty much everything now, and it's up significantly from a year ago, and I imagine it'll only be higher next year. You know, the other key growth opportunity is video, right? They've been pushing video as a real initiative. If your newsfeed is anything like mine, you're seeing videos constantly. Every other post is a video, so. That's where some of the growth and where the real money is for advertisers is getting folks to kind of watch videos, add videos in their feeds.
Do they run the risk or have the danger of becoming, I don't want to say too old, because it wouldn't be that they'd be too old, but that the younger members who are using it now might go elsewhere?
I think that's a real concern. I think everyone's thinking about what happens with Facebook in a couple of years. A lot of the younger demographics, you know, they're on Snapchat, they're on other platforms. Fortunately, they've got Instagram, which also skews a little bit younger. But you've sort of seen it with the addition of filters, the addition of Instagram stories. Facebook has been kind of tinkering with its service to make it more like Snapchat, trying in a bid to kind of lure some of these younger users back to Facebook, back to, you know, their news feeds.
Roger Chang from CNET, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. I don't know if you heard Kim's news, but she talked about the fact that lines are out the door. Here at Tribune, where they're selling print editions of the newspaper and also at a lot of sporting goods stores around the area. People literally are lining outside and down the street to try to buy souvenirs of this World Series victory. We're going to talk to Bob Iback from Nyko Sports. Bob, is he's got Cubs in his blood, right? You used to work for the Cubs years ago.
I sure did, Steve. I was there for about 9 years as their public relations director, started the Vine Line newspaper, and had a lot of experiences in 84 and 89, and we got real close, but so I'm on cloud nine today.
That's nice, isn't it? I know that one of the things that you have at Nyko Sports is this set of commemorative baseballs. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's really nice. There's four different World Series baseballs in this set. Comes in a nice acrylic display case for $99. And in a moment, I'll give the listeners a nice toll-free number and a website how they can order, because there's only 5,000 of these baseball sets that are ever going to be made. We're probably halfway sold out already. They're made by Rawlings, fully licensed. It's also going to raise some money for a local charity here. Nyko Sports is donating it to the Cubs charities.
Bob, are these the sorts of things you go play in the backyard with your kid with?
Absolutely not. The baseballs you're going to get in this is a commemorative baseball from 1907, one from 1908, replica ball. Of course, the 2016 World Series championship ball with all the data on there, scores and highlights, and also a Wrigley Field history ball. You'll get all four of the baseballs in the display case for $99. If folks still want to get these, you got to order fast because these will sell out. It's 1-800-345-2868. That's 1-800-345-2868. And, Steve, we've got a nice website set up. If you can't get through the lines, go to nykosports.com, and you spell that NIKCO sports.com. These will be sent to you in about 6-7 weeks. You can use them for a Christmas or holiday gift item. And I know folks already this morning are calling up and ordering four and five of these sets at a time.
Well, I just like the idea that it sort of it represents the various breaks in our torture as Cubs fans. So you've got how did you feel last night when it all happened?
Well, you know, I felt relieved. I was on that 84 team, and there we got five, you know, we got within five outs of going to the World Series against the Tigers.
I know.
I looked to the sky that night, and I said, last night, and I said, for guys like Gary Woods and Tom Verizer and Don Zimmer and John Vukovich and a bunch of others who aren't with us anymore, I just looked up above and said, this is for you guys.
Yeah, and, you know, we were talking earlier, the great Milt Rosenberg, who for so many, not Milt Rosenberg.
Jack Rosenberg?
Jack Rosenberg. I'm thinking of Milt. But, you know, I worked with Jack, you worked with Jack, and I know he's watching and listening and happy that he could see a championship, too.
Along with Arnie Harrison, you know, all the guys that were there, Jack Burkhouse and Vince Lloyd and good kid Lou Boudreau. I bet you Lou was a little torn because he was on that Indians team that won the World Series in 48.
When I was a kid, we used to get tickets from Lou Boudreau once a year. That was always a big occasion for me. Oh, listen,
Bob. He always called everybody good kid.
Good kid. Give me that phone number and website one more time for these commemorative baseballs.
Okay, it's 1-800-345-2868. Another way to remember it, Steve, is 1-800-345-BUNT, B-U-N-T.
Tell Javi Baez.
Baez won't remember that one. Or you can go to the website, nykosports.com, NIKCO sports.com. And again, $99 gets you the four-ball World Series sets for the Chicago Cubs, only 5,000 made, and you'll get a display case with it.
Excellent. Thanks. Nice to talk to you, Bob.
Okay, have a great day now, and go Cubs.
You bet. It's the Biz Lunch. It's 11:25. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got the music of Peter Himmelman on the program today. He'll be along a little bit later. Right now, Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management is in the studio. Bill, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Good afternoon, sir.
Go Cubs, your hands are, you're weighed down. You've got all of this paraphernalia, all of the Cubs T-shirts and the plaques and all of that.
Yes, we do.
So that is
going back and decorate the office.
I think that's how I might plan my retirement. I'll just buy all this stuff that will be worth a fortune when it comes time for me to retire. Is that a good strategy?
It's as good as any, right?
I guess you're doing it. Yeah. So we were talking off the air, though, about how the World Series and Cubs can relate or how you can carry that into retirement. Explain that for me.
In terms of retirement planning, baseball season is a long season, right?
Yeah.
It takes a long time to get to the playoffs. And throughout the season, you're constantly tempted to go for home runs But if you go for home runs, you can get struck out too. What gets you there and what wins the season is singles and doubles. And it's the same thing in retirement planning. It's a long season too until you get to the point where you're ready to retire. And that's kind of like the playoffs. And what gets you to and through retirement is hitting singles and doubles, not striking out.
So don't plan on the lottery ticket. Do the work day to day.
Well, you can do that on the side.
Okay,
one ticket, that's okay.
Bill Geiger is here from Geiger Wealth Management. And our conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. So the idea then that you should be laying down a not a sacrifice bunt, but bunting for a single once in a while or things like that.
Yeah, and going for singles and doubles. What won the World Series last night in the overtime inning was not home runs. They were that close to winning, and what allowed them to close it are singles and doubles.
And so what do you tell people when they come into your office and trying to figure out how to hit singles and doubles?
Well, the first thing we do is we look at their portfolio. And a lot of times, whether they know it or not, they're swinging for the fences
with
their portfolio. And the singles and doubles you really should work for is the single is reducing the risk in your portfolio, and the doubles is preparing income for retirement. You get those two right, and you'll win the World Series.
You have to hit the singles before you hit the doubles?
Well, you do them both same time.
You do?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let's. You know, we got just a minute left, and this is our last conversation before the country decides.
That's true.
Next week.
That's true.
Should we, if we're planning retirement, I mean, do you have an eye on the election? Is that something we should be watching?
Yeah, but two things. I spent 30 years in Washington, D.C., and maybe I'm a little jaded from that, but I don't believe that it's going to be over next Tuesday. I think there's going to be lawsuits, and this is going to drag out for a while. This is just me.
Bill Geiger, no one wants to hear that.
I know, but I believe it's real. But the second thing is no matter who gets elected, no matter which way the market goes, you really need to prepare for it. You need to make your portfolio as bulletproof as possible. Listen, because the Cubs won last night, we're going to do something really special. The next five callers who call in, I'm going to sit down with them personally to put together a full-blown retirement plan. We're going to do a complimentary. All you have to do is have $500,000 or more in your portfolio.
All right, Bill Geiger, take all those T-shirts, the sweatshirts, the hoodies, the plaques. Are they going to
yes,
fit in
sir.
Your car?
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll see you in a couple weeks. If you're nearing retirement, this could be a confusing time. And if you're wondering how the election or global events, the current economy might affect your retirement, well, you're not alone. Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management understands and has a tremendous opportunity for you today. As he said, he's going to sit down with you personally, do a full-blown retirement analysis, complimentary, for the next five callers who have at least $500,000 saved for their retirement. Call 800-681-2498, and Bill can translate the complex retirement process into easy-to-understand steps, including a retirement income plan. Call Geiger Wealth Management right now, 800-681-2498. That's 800-681-2498. One more time, I'll give you that number, 800-681-2498. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, get this. So if you listen regularly, you know I was leading a group of WGN listeners to Ireland a few weeks ago. On the plane ride over, I'm looking at my iPhone and trying to figure out what music to listen to, and I see a song list from Peter Himmelman. I'm thinking, I haven't listened to Peter Himmelman in years, maybe 5-6 years. I listened to it on the flight. I am in Cork with the group 2 days later, and I get an email from a publicist for Peter Himmelman. Says he's got a book out called Let Me Out and was interested in coming on the program. What a weird coincidence. And now here he is sitting next to me. Peter, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you so much.
I mean, is that odd? I can't believe that.
You know, a lot of serendipity here, especially with the Cubs. You know, they were putting some stuff into the universe a week before.
Are you taking any credit for that? Is it?
Just a tiny bit.
Go for it. All right, so I saw you. Met 25 years or so when you used to come through in concerts. I saw you a couple times, was a fan. And then you went through what so many of us are sort of going through these days with the great disruption and changes in technology. The music business wasn't the one that you grew up and learned how to succeed at, right? So you had to find something new.
That's right.
You transitioned.
You know, I try to explain this. I have a cousin who's a diamond dealer in a northern suburb of Chicago, mm-hmm. and he asked me a couple years ago. He said, "So, you know, how do you explain what happened, the disruption?" I said, "So you're a diamond dealer. Imagine that you're, you know, metaphorically cupping your hands under your computer screen, and every diamond you're trying so hard to sell falls out, infinitely reproducible with no loss of quality, into your hands and everyone's hands across the globe."
And that's where we are with music.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it just not a... You can mourn it, you can grieve it, or you can say, so where do we go from here?
Some people are still trying to make money at it, and I'm sure that they are.
Yeah, I mean, there's several ways to do it. I mean, you know, I was scoring TV and film for many years. That's still, you know, congressionally protected royalty rates and, you know, residual rates on that stuff. But those are really hard to get. It's like winning the lottery or something. So, getting your song in a commercial or things like that.
Right, but it's just not. So when you were touring, and tell me if I'm right or wrong here, I always thought that when I would go to a concert in the 90s or the 80s, the artist was there to sell me CDs. They weren't making money on the concert so much. And it seems like now it's flipped. Artists are trying to make money on concerts because they're not on CDs.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, if you look at the economics of sort of the concert business with touring and fuel prices and airplane tickets and road, it's very, very difficult.
Right.
I mean, it's only, you know, people always say, well, Lady Gaga seems to be making a lot of money, of course. And, you know, so does everybody else that who owns Google or whatever it is. So those are kind of outliers.
All right. And so you move on, or you, I mean, you're still making music, still doing all of that. But tell me about sort of the personal disruption, I guess, when all of a sudden that gets pulled out from under you and you realize you got to find something else.
Yeah, so we've just now talked a little bit about sort of the remunerative issues that occur when music is not selling, but maybe on a deeper level, there's this sense, well, I'll ask you, when was the last time you listened to a full album
right.
to the exclusion of all other things?
Nothing.
And here you are, a guy in radio, which
right.
is across the board, 99.9% of people say the same thing. It's been years. So when we create something, we do it for our own enjoyment, whatever it could be, a business plan or a school lecture, whatever. We always do things as a call and response so that we get a certain amount of joy from doing it, but we also wanted to go back to somebody, be of value to somebody,
right,
and then
right.
it kind of comes back to us. I felt there was this cessation in that circular energy where people simply didn't really care.
You know, I interviewed a lot of authors, and I always say a book isn't finished until the equation of the reader is added into it, right? The reader finishes the book in many ways because of how they take it in. So what you're saying is people stop taking in music.
It's very similar. I mean, if you want to broaden this out to any kind of creative endeavor, which I certainly include, even a conversation or, you know, making a dinner or making love or whatever it is, those things always require some reciprocal response.
Right,
everything
right,
does.
Right.
And when you find that there's a red light on it, a dead end, you know, it's very dispiriting.
I want to talk about where you've moved on to, not that the music has stopped, but tell me about Big Muse.
Well, I had this idea about 4 or 5 years ago it was an idea that popped in my head. I wonder, because I had three kids going to school at once, at college, you know, pretty much one after the other.
That's so, not family planning.
Yeah, no, nah, exactly. You don't think about that at the time. It's late at night. No one is thinking about that. Thank you. And so I remember that I had 20 years ago, I was asked by the Telluride Film and Concert Festival people, could you teach songwriting to people? I'm like, you know, I never tried. They said, well, we'll pay you and we'll put your family up in a cabin by a bubbling brook. I'm
right,
like, yeah,
right.
Why not? And I got there. There were 300 people at this song camp. It was out in the woods. And I had a group of like 60 people. And I started thinking about, well, what is their problem writing songs? And generally the songwriter's problem is I have all these spare parts. It's very hard for me to make a cogent whole. That's everyone's problem. And, you know, they would write two or three songs a year. I'm like, come on, you should be writing two or three a day.
Right, right.
And I realized right away that it was fear of judgment, of criticism, of, you know, failure that was preventing a free exchange of their creative ideas.
You write a little about that and say that it's there's science there and that that fear is useful in some cases, but it's what really holds us back in most.
Yeah, so the fear, which I didn't have this all kind of figured out at the time when I was teaching these songwriters, it's a bit of the amygdala, the part of the limbic or primitive brain in a human being. Now, I call this MARV. Right. It's our inner critic.
MARV is in the car.
Right. And MARV is an acronym for majorly afraid of revealing vulnerability. So what the amygdala does, or MARV, we'll refer to it from now on with his cute name, is that he's always on the lookout for threats. For sure, if a rabid puma were to run into the room right now, you know, I'd probably talk its ear off. You might smack it or whatever he needs to do. It would be MARV pulling the adrenaline lever. The problem is that MARV also feels that people not liking our idea, our book of poetry, or our business plan, or our speech that we're giving, he views that as a mortal threat. And the reason simply is, he says, if you fail, you will then feel ashamed. If you are ashamed, this is logical, right, you will be abandoned. That's what happens to the shameful among us. And then he goes in for the kill. If you're abandoned, let me take you back to your earliest childhood, where abandonment simply meant that you would literally die.
Right.
And he presents us with this mortal fear.
Well, that's MARV, and you write about MARV in Let Me Out. We're just about out of time, I'm sorry to say, but I just want to get to one thing, because I've practiced this on my own. I didn't realize it, and it's so true. You talk about breaking down issues or creative projects and things like that, but you say give it 3 minutes. If something's bothering you, you need to get something done, don't try to finish it at once. Sit down for 3 minutes and start.
A tiny step. I wanted to fly an airplane. I did one step. I sat in my chair with intention, and I Googled flight times in Santa Monica, where I live. 2 months later, I'm flying a Cessna 172 over the San Fernando Valley.
It's simple. You sat down for 3 minutes.
It was so simple. The parts that you can break an idea into are ridiculously small.
And the idea that this MARV or whatever can keep you from just taking the one step.
That's right.
And once you take the step, you realize that things can be done.
And once you take the step, MARV is peace out. He's good. He wants you to succeed.
Peter Himmelman, it's great to see you. Thanks very much. I appreciate
that. Thank you for having me.
The name of the book is Let Me Out. This is The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. One more there from Peter Himmelman. I hope you enjoyed listening to him as much as I enjoyed talking to him. Interesting guy, and I was a big fan in the 90s, loved his music, and I enjoyed his book very much as well. It is called Let Me Out. Okay, so we talked not too long ago about rugby in the United States and how big rugby was becoming. USA Rugby's got 125,000 active members now. 32,000 people are playing collegiate rugby, 27,000 playing senior club rugby, and none of them playing at nearly the level that you can see later this weekend in Chicago. We're joined now by Mike Principe from TLA Worldwide, one of the organizers of Rugby Weekend in Chicago. Mike, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Do you ever play yourself?
Let's just say I'm vertically challenged.
That's a no. Okay. It is amazing, though, the growth that we're seeing in this country. Do you have any idea what that could be related to, or what's prompting it?
Sure. Look, I think there are a couple of factors. If you actually spend some time watching rugby, you'll get it. It is unbelievably fun to watch. And it ticks a lot of the boxes that the American consumer and sports fan really enjoys. It's fast-paced. It's hard-hitting. It shows really well on TV. And these guys are just unbelievable athletes. I mean, it's no surprise that it's starting to pick up here.
And so there's a chance this weekend. Now, we've got two matches, right? The All Blacks are playing the team from Ireland. I don't mean to keep talking about my trips to Ireland, but I was there about a month ago, and I'm in Kerry talking to a restaurant owner, and he said, oh, I'm going to be in Chicago in November for this rugby match, Ireland taking on the All Blacks. The All Blacks are probably the preeminent worldwide team, and when they were here in 2014 at Soldier Field, I think that's the biggest U.S. crowd to ever watch a rugby match.
It was. We're pleased to bring them back. And, you know, they played a really tough American team in 2014. It was playing Friday night against the Maori All Blacks at Toyota Park. But having the Irish come in to play the All Blacks on Saturday should really create an unbelievable environment.
The Irish are the number six team in the world?
Right now they are, yes.
All Blacks are number one?
Yep.
Hey, I'm going to ask you a question that might be unfair, but did the All Blacks, did they get their name somehow from Ireland?
No. It's their uniform colors.
Okay. I thought there was some sort of lore there. All right. So a couple of matches that people can go, one Toyota, the other at Soldier Field. Who are the people who are going to be coming to see this? Are they rugby novices, or are there sort of are there 60,000 hardcore rugby fans out there?
Well, that's the nice thing about rugby, and being one of the folks organizing the event with USA Rugby, is the spread of folks that are coming to see the matches is really impressive and encouraging for the growth of rugby in the sport. So you have a traveling crew from New Zealand and Ireland. I mean, there's a very passionate international fan base that is coming in. You are going to see some hardcore rugby fans there as well, from the States and Canada. But we are seeing a good amount of sports fans who are interested in seeing a sport that's relatively new to us, but with rugby sevens, which is a different type of rugby, being shown at the Rio Olympics for the first time since 1924. People are really starting to take notice of the sport.
Are the tickets still available, or are these sellouts?
Well, Soldier Field's a sellout. There are a couple left at Toyota right now. So please, if folks want to see the match there, and I really hope they do, they should try to get online right now.
Are you drinking for the website there?
It's rugbyweekend.com.
Okay, good. Toyota Park is a great place, too. I've been out there for a couple fire games, so why not make a weekend of it? There's no baseball to watch anymore.
Correct. And an interesting fun fact, you're talking about breaking curses and streaks. So the first time the All Blacks and the Irish played was 1905, and the Irish won that match. They haven't won since.
Well, there you go. Do people root for or against the All Blacks when they're here?
When they're here, folks root for them. And yeah. I was talking to Steve, too, who is the CEO of the NZRU, the governing body for the All Blacks. And he said in New Zealand, they're the country's obviously, favorite team. And they like to be the second favorite team in any other country they're going to.
Mike, it's great to talk to you. I wish you a great weekend. I know it starts with a gala tonight.
It does. It does. Steve, thanks. I would like to say one piece, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Astellas, one of our partners, is actually doing an unbelievable program right now. They're trying to set a Guinness World Record for organ donor registrations.
Nice.
In fact, they're making a $5 donation if anybody tweets hashtag #PoundOrganDonor. And if you can sign up at rugbyrecord.org, if you do want to an organ donor, it's not only supporting a fantastic cause, but it's helping to set a world record. So I just wanted to give folks a piece of that, as well as AIG, who's our presenter for the weekend, has been doing some tremendous grassroots and charitable contributions and initiatives with kids and youth around the country.
All right, so, Mike, have a great weekend. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.